Hey, what's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 111 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis, here again with Sean Sears. How's it going?
Doing good, doing good. You know, beyond another kind of disappointing Cubs loss, it's been an okay morning, but...
I whiffed on that when I said that the conditions were right for the Cubs to just get the offense going against Clay Buchholz. Man, that just did not happen at all.
Yeah, right. What the heck? I mean, Clay Buchholz was okay. I think the Cubs made him look a little bit better than what he was showing. And it was also kind of a big zone. But, you know, who saw that coming? Apparently not us. But
yeah, and I feel like there was a lot of people complaining that Buchholz's zone was a little bit wider than Hendricks's was. I don't know like how much that necessarily affected the game, although I will say Hendricks ended up throwing a lot more pitches, but that really was the Diamondbacks employ the strategy that everybody's been employing against Hendricks lately, and that is to wait him out. And the Cubs were swinging early at Buchholz because they were seeing pitches they liked, and a lot of their contact was right at fielders. So it was just a really frustrating game in general.
Yeah, that's it. Just like you said, like essentially teams are just waiting for Hendricks to either make a mistake, not locate or do whatever. And it's frustrating because we were so used to Hendricks really just going out there and dominating for more or less the last 2 years. So it's frustrating to see him do this right now. But I think what might be more frustrating to me is because you and I have talked about it on the show, Hendricks makes the adjustments to be successful. He finds ways to fix whatever's going on. The Cubs offense being this just brutally ridiculous at swinging at pitches and not executing in moments when they need to. It goes from like the highest level of like elite offense to just, you know, like we saw last night, making Clay Buchholz look really good.
Yeah. And I mean, that happens in baseball. I mean, baseball is going to baseball, as we always say, but Buchholz went 6 2/3 innings. He allowed 6 hits. 2 of those were basically the last 2 batters he faced. 2 walks, 1 earned run. That he struck out 5. That earned run came on a Jason Hayward opposite field homer into the basket. The Cubs had their biggest threat going in the 7th inning, but Al Mora struck out with the bases loaded. Meanwhile, Kyle Hendricks was mostly fine, I think. He built up his pitch count early. I think he was at 71 pitches after 3 innings. He ended up throwing 106 pitches over 5. He allowed 7 hits and 3 earned runs, all 3 coming in the 5th inning. He also struck out 8, which is a lot, which also will kind of, you know, speak to the amount of pitches he had to throw. He had his changeup working. It was just a lot of what happened to him was kind of getting BABIPped, like little ground balls into the right spot, just out of the reach of a fielder. Yeah. So I don't feel like Hendricks was bad, but the pitch count in general is frustrating.
Yeah, that's like you said, that's really what it was. I mean, it was tough to, even if Hendricks was doing fantastically, it would have been tough to justify Hendricks going past 5 innings just because of the pitch count alone. Yeah. And that's a good point. He wasn't smashed for sure. He wasn't hit very hard. It just, like you said, when that's all you need sometimes against a guy like Kyle Hendricks, just to pop a few balls through, just because once you get runners on, he really has to execute. And, you know, his stuff isn't meant to blow people away. It's meant to induce contact. And when you got runners on, even if you do, you know, get a slow roller to the right side, you know, sometimes you're going to sneak a run across. And that's kind of just what happened.
Yeah. And officially, the Cubs lost 5-1. Today, they play the D-backs in an afternoon game that's at 1:20. This will be John Lester versus Robbie Ray, who strikes out a ton of batters. He's got 12.6 strikeouts per 9, but he also walks nearly 5 per 9.
Yeah, Ray, I was going to say.
Yeah. Ray has a 5.37 ERA in 11 starts this year. Lester, in general, has been really good for the Cubs this year, but his peripherals are some of the worst of his career. He in 24 2/3 innings over his last 4 starts, opponents are batting .320 against Lester. That's not good.
Yeah, no. Lester kind of talked about this in his last start. Cardinals smacked around and they won 18-5. He acknowledged in the press conference afterwards that he knew there was something wrong. He said he felt like it had been coming 4 or 5 starts, which I think we all kind of saw just because it was pretty obvious there was regression there. But it's interesting that he knew what the issue was, or at least was aware that there was something not right. He didn't go into detail about what exactly the issue was mechanically, but it sounded like he was going to work hard and watch video and do whatever he needed to do to make that change. So I was encouraged by what Leonard Irvis that it might be less of like, oh, I just have to fix this thing mechanically, and more of like, oh, my fastball only goes 92 miles an hour. I have to locate every time now.
Yeah, and really that's the key for Lester, is that he does just have to locate really well. And when he's not getting those pitches on the corners, or you know, he's missing on the corners or missing over the plate, that's when he gets into trouble. So he kind of walks a fine line. He's a guy that I worry about less than I worry about the rest of these guys. Before we get into, you know, the starting pitching, let's just do, we have the lineup already. So Rizzo leading off as usual. Almora bats second. Zobrist is third at second base. Contreras is fourth. Addison Russell fifth. Schwarber sixth. Ian Happ seventh. Lester's batting eighth, and LaStella at third base. So that lineup feels so empty without Baez, without Bryant. Bryant is the real concern. The fact that, you know, they waited so long to DL him, and they let him go out there with that sore shoulder for basically a month, and then they DL'd him, and then they brought him back with like two games left before the All-Star break, rather than giving him the entire span, which the only reason I bring that up is because that's something we harped at the moment that it happened. And then now he's back, and he's got to sit for 2 days again, and it's just like, it's the same problem. It's a shoulder issue. His shoulder's tired. I'm not a doctor, so I don't know what's wrong with it, but it just feels like right now they've mishandled this entire situation and a detriment of the rest of Bryant's season.
Yeah, that's kind of how I'm worried about right now. I mean, when they were saying, I was reading some of the quotes from Joe Madden yesterday, he said, which is very, like, everything that came out just made me more nervous than I was before that. I don't know. Like you said, if the Cubs had been more proactive about this, we could maybe see Bryant coming back in the next, you know, couple days and being okay. But yeah, I mean, the Cubs need Chris Bryant a lot. And if he's not going to be healthy, I mean, just the last couple games, it's been apparent. I mean, he has been essentially a non-factor in any of the offense. He hit that one home run before the All-Star break. He hit a home run. Maybe a game or two again, one of the games against the Cardinals, I think. I can't remember exactly. But yeah, he hasn't been fantastic, especially Monday night. He was just looking super uncomfortable at the plate. If the Cubs do have to DL him, like, let's just do it now and get it over with, and the Cubs can just kind of acknowledge this might be how many injuries they're dealing with. But, you know, playing this like in between game of like, well, we don't want to DL Chris Bryant, but he can't play right now. Like, he's not going to play, it sounds like, today. He's not going to play probably Thursday, it sounded like, as well. So I don't know. It's a frustrating situation just because we don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that's really the big thing. And, you know, when I say it's mishandled from the start, I would rather Chris Bryant go on the DL for the entire month of June and get his shoulder right and come back in July for them to wait to put him on the DL and then, you know, have to put him on there and then bring him back early and then his shoulder still hurts. And it, really what's important, I feel like the Cubs could have survived that stretch without him, especially because he wasn't hitting for any power. But they're not going to survive October if Chris Bryant has a sore shoulder and can't hit a home run.
What's going on? Apparently the Red Sox just got Nathan Eovaldi.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Well, check that one off the list for the Cubs. In our second segment, we're going to do a who says no kind of thing. I asked for trade suggestions from the fans. Fortunately, he was not in any of them. Yeah. All right. That's, we don't have to talk about their rotation anymore. We can go to the second segment where we'll take those trade proposals from fans and tell them who says no. Okay, our second segment, this is an idea. I don't remember who I saw it from, but I've totally stolen this. I ripped this off. I saw somebody else doing the same thing and thought it maybe just apply it to the Cubs and do it. It's a who says no. I asked people on Twitter and other people to email your trade proposals, essentially. Give me the players that the Cubs send for whoever else, and then you and I will decide whether the Cubs or the other trading team would say no on that deal. Everyone clear on the idea?
Yep, everyone here.
All right. So the very first one, I'll kick this one to you first. Addison Russell, Victor Caratini, Albert Alzolay, and outfield prospect Nelson Velasquez or Jacob DeGrom. Who says no?
If we're being realistically honest, the Mets, unless they're getting back a more talented or more maybe polished player than Addison, that's a really good trade scheme of things. I could just see the Mets saying no because they probably want more.
Yeah, I would think that the Mets would say no on that one. They definitely want more than a headliner of Addison Russell with Victor Caratini. You know, Alzolay's injured. Velasquez, wow, that's tough for me today for some reason. He's 19 years old and hasn't been, you know, performing all that well this year. But
yeah,
so I mean, that's just for me, that's an underwhelming trade for Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good trade package. It's an idea that like kind of works, but yeah, you get those pieces, especially in the back end. Alizé being hurt probably in my mind means you probably need two more prospects. And I mean, there's no way if the Cubs are trading prospects for Jacob DeGrom, there's no way David Bode, like, you know, it wouldn't happen.
Yeah, and well, I guess that leads us into our next one. This one is Ian Happ, Victor Caratini, David Bode, and any one of the Cubs pitching prospects for DeGrom.
That's still light. unfortunately, I really think, like we talked about, I think the Mets would be dumb not to ask for Javi Baez, not to ask for Wilson Contreras, not as our outside of Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo that the Cubs might realistically consider trade. Yeah, no, too light.
Yep, I agree. It's just too hard. I don't think the Cubs are going to match up with the Mets at all on a trade for DeGrom. I don't think anybody's going to trade for DeGrom, to be totally honest. But yeah, I just don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, when you factor in years of control, and then you look at what the Cubs gave up for a guy like Jose Quintana, who, but not even, you know, near the level that Jacob DeGrom has been the last couple of years. I mean, you know, barring, you know, of course, there's been a little bit of some injury history there, but yeah, I mean, this is the best pitcher, you know, in baseball right now, I would argue, or at least the hottest one.
Right. All right. This one is any two of the Cubs non-top 10 prospects for James Shields. Who says no?
Probably the White Sox. Odds owed $16 million next year. The Cubs would have to either just eat that or ask the White Sox to eat a portion of that money or give the Cubs some money so they can stay under the luxury tax.
Well, he has a $2 million buyout.
Ooh, okay. All right.
And because of what the Padres are paying on his money this year, basically the rest of this season plus the buyout is like a total of $5 or $6 million.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow. I did not realize that. That totally changes my perspective on James Shields. Yeah, I mean, if you're the White Sox, you would think the Cubs probably have to throw in a pitcher to match up, or, you know, the White Sox could just call Michael Kopech finally. Yeah, I mean, that's actually not a bad idea. The Cubs should do that.
As far as all the trades on this list, that one comes the closest, in my opinion, to nobody says no. That probably is about right. I think two, you know, essentially you're talking like, a Javier Assad type player,
right?
A guy who's not in your top 10, just him and another guy like that. Maybe a guy at Double A like Zach Short. Two of those guys for James Shields, I don't feel like is ridiculous. He's a rental; doesn't cost that much money. He goes innings, which is really what they need.
That would be
a good trade in my opinion.
Yeah, actually, I actually wrote about him as an option in my my piece to the Cubs' retaliation to missing out on Zach Britton. And I actually kind of convinced Tony Andracki that it was a good idea because I first said it to him and he hated the idea, but he warmed up to it as I talked about it.
Well, I'll take credit for being, even though no one's offering it to me, I'll take credit for being the leader on the James Shields thing because I was the first to write about it like 2 weeks ago that it was a good idea. But yeah. All right. Second one from the same person. Any two of the Cubs' non-top 10 pitching prospects for Tyson Ross. And if anyone's unfamiliar, I'll give Ross's stats. 4.29 ERA, 4.48 FIP in 113 and a third innings. His peripherals are pretty much what his career numbers are, which is good. And he has a very cheap contract for just this 1 year.
Yeah, I'm essentially an innings eater with some maybe not higher quality stuff, but just better stuff maybe from than James Shields can still throw up close to, you know, upper 90s and whatnot. Yeah, I mean, I would be okay with that. I want a Tyson Russell over Brett Anderson. So getting him out the deadline just to eat innings, that's what the Cubs need.
Yeah, this is another one that I feel like is probably a good deal. Maybe the Padres want more than that for Tyson Ross just because of the pitching market.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's appropriate at least. You know, I don't think the Cubs should have to give up three prospects for Tyson Ross unless it's like, you know, a prospect that falls between 11 and 20, a prospect that falls between 20 and 25, and then a prospect that, you know, is below their top 30.
Yeah, that's true. It all depends. Like, I mean, what the Yankees gave up for Zach Britton yesterday for pay, and everything we'd heard before that felt like that the able to sneak a lot cheaper than what they were expecting. Like there were reports from like MLB trade rumors saying like the teams could possibly trade for Britton and Bundy or Kevin Gausman in the same deal or something like that.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, yeah, it all depends on who gets involved. It could turn that seems pretty fair.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of Dylan Bundy, next one.
Oh.
Mark Zagunas and Zach Short for Dylan Bundy. And Bundy has a 4.57 ERA, a 4.86 FIP in 108 and a third innings, 9.6 strikeouts per nine, 2.9 walks per nine, three more years of control, cheap contract. Lots of talent coming from the Orioles, but I think two Tommy John surgeries. So Dylan Bundy, is that good enough? Mark Zagunas and Zach Short.
He's had not the greatest season, but I don't know if I can just, I mean, the Orioles making a rational trade just doesn't seem like it's going to make sense. We were just talking about, they kind of hurt the Yankees by any means for that trade for Britton, but they got more out of them than I think anyone expected was going to go. He has to come in. Angelos can feel good about himself. I don't know. But it just feels a little short. I think you might need a more added into that mix.
Yeah, I mean, Britton is the better player, but because he's a reliever, because he's older, because it's a rental versus a young pitcher with talent that has 3 years of control, I feel like it should be more for Bundy than it was for Britton. I know it doesn't necessarily work that way because starter and reliever markets are different, but I don't feel like you know, a triple A or a 4A outfielder, which is kind of what Mark Zagunas is, and you know, kind of a borderline middle infielder, like a utility guy in the future at best. I don't feel like that's enough for him. I think they need to throw in a better prospect. I feel like maybe if you have three prospects and one of them is Zagunas, one of them is Short, and the other one is maybe Dwayne Underwood or maybe something even a little better than Dwayne Underwood, I feel like that's more fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's about how I feel. Just, I mean, he's at one point was a top prospect. Like you said, clearly Britton, the way better player, better track record. But yeah, with injury scares and all that, I don't know. He just doesn't seem like the guy that the Cubs would want to go seven innings or expect him to. So I don't know.
Yeah,
not the right profile.
Doesn't seem like a fit. All right, the last one, and then this one made me laugh, but I threw it on here just for fun. Chris Bryant and Kyle Schwarber for Mike Trout. Who says no?
Oh boy.
I'll go first. I think the Angels say no. I think definitely the Angels.
Yeah, I think the Angels might say no. I think the Cubs might say no too, but yeah, the question would just be like, why? Why would anyone make that trade?
Right.
Get like, let's get two good players, modern day Mickey Mantle that you're moving.
Yeah, so. I don't I don't think that makes any sense. Not that it like is bad for either team specifically. I think it's probably better for the Cubs, especially right now dealing Bryant when he's dealing with a shoulder injury. But
yeah,
I mean, if he gets back to 2016, 2017 Bryant by the end of the year or next year, I think it's a decent deal for the Angels getting Schwarber and a DH and a third baseman. But I don't see why that would help them. And really, yeah. I mean, I see it. If I have to decide which team it helps more, objectively, it helps the Cubs more because Mike Trout is what you said, modern day Mickey Mantle, possibly one of the, you know, all things considered, best players of all time.
That's that's not a slam dunk for any team, but probably a win for the Cubs. I agree.
All right, let's go ahead and pause, and we'll go to our third segment. All right, so updating the NL Central standings. It wasn't good for the Cubs yesterday, for their game and all the other games. While the Cubs were being embarrassed by Clay Buchholz, the rest of the teams in the division were busy winning. The Brewers walked off the Washington Nationals in 10 innings, winning 5-4. The Pirates were up 7-0 on the Cleveland Indians after two innings and won that game 9-4. The Cardinals were getting another no-hitter from a kid in his first major league start. Austin Gomber tossed 6 no-hit innings before he went out and gave up a single to Joey Votto. And this game just mirrored the game before so much. The next batter was Eugenio Suarez, who homered to tie the game in the 9th inning off Bud Norris 2 days ago. Well, yesterday, after Votto's single to break up the no-hitter, Suarez homered to tie the game at 2 in the 7th inning. But the Cardinals didn't blow this one completely. They ended up winning 4-2 in 11 innings. So the standings going into today's afternoon game, the Cubs remain in first place at 58-42, but they're just 1.5 games up on the Brewers, who are 58-45. The Pirates are 54-49 and suddenly just 6 games out of first place. The Cardinals are 51-50, 7.5 back, while the Reds are 44-57 and 14.5 games out of first place.
What? Darn it. After the Cubs kind of dodged the bullet a couple times with a few of the losses they dropped just because the Brewers lost or were losing to the Dodgers, it's just like, oh, that's right, teams can win, and now suddenly it's really scary. Like you said, the biggest thing for me, the Pirates are somehow only 6 games back after being close to almost double digits back. I can't see them staying this hot, but I've said that the last 4 podcasts, and they just have won. So, I mean, you know, what do you do at that point?
I don't know. I have faith that the Cubs are going to turn this around, but the Bryant stuff is really scary, and the rotation stuff is a little scary too.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, if Bryant is, I think the way they're talking about it too is what's scaring me, because before it was just like, you know, okay, shoulder fatigueness, I understand that. It's going to take some time. You know, you just got to work your way through it and get to where you were before. But the way the Cubs are talking about it, I mean, just giving him like a random day of rest, another random day of rest. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if Bryant ends up on the DL next week or something like that. But I mean, it is July 25th. You know, you're not going to shut him down for this season with still 2.5 to play. So yeah. I don't know. It's you got to hope that Chris Bryant comes back and can be Chris Bryant, and that someone on this pitching staff can pull together. And Yu Darvish might be Yu Darvish from last year, second half, fingers crossed. Yeah. A lot of what ifs right now.
Right. Well, we said that the Mets probably wouldn't trade DeGrom earlier. No breaking news on that front, but Jonas Cespedes will undergo season-ending surgery to repair chronic heel problems, and his recovery time is expected to be up to 10 months. So maybe the Mets look at that and say, well, how are we going to compete next year for missing Cespedes for half the year? Maybe they do look into a retool where they could add a few players that maybe be competitive for 2020. So I guess it's more possible now than it was maybe 2-3 days ago.
Yeah. Somewhat breaking news. It sounds like we have convinced Jared Willis of the idea of James Shields being a Cubs target. So chalk that up as a win, right?
Yeah. I'm putting people in my column. I got you, then you got Tony Andracki, and now we've got Jared. That's let's just go find Theo and be like, hey,
yeah,
like 6 or 7 innings every damn time. Go get this guy.
You should do it. Think about it.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you made it all the way through, we know we probably had a couple audio problems along the way. Just kind of chalk that up to internet connections. But we promise to be better next time. Hopefully you enjoyed Who Says No. It was a lot of Other Team Says No. But it was still fun. I loved it. And thanks for listening.